WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. The governor signs a bill making it easier for college athletes to get paid for the use of their name, image, and likeness. If you've got an invasive but beautiful pear tree in your yard, the Department of Forestry would like a word. And Jeff Shapiro has a review of this week in state politics, including, of course, the General Assembly's veto session. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, April 19th. On Thursday, Governor Glenn Youngkin signed a bill making it easier for college athletes to get paid for the use of their name, image, and likeness, or NIL. Virginia Public Radio's Brad Cutner reports.
Had the NIL rules been in place when I was in college, I would have not had an NIL deal.
That's Governor Glenn Youngkin, a former college basketball player, riffing on his own benchwarming skills in the face of a new law that would allow Virginia college athletes to financially benefit from their NIL, or name, image, and likeness. It specifically allows the schools themselves to pay students for their NIL. It's a step Youngkin and Democratic Senator Aaron Rouse, a former Virginia Tech football star who went on to play for the Green Bay Packers, said would make the state's college sports system more competitive while enabling students to focus on what's important.
I believe this legislation helps them understand the importance of their education while not having to worry about financial burdens.
Republican Terry Kilgore, who co-patroned the effort with Delegate Terry Austin, said other states and the NCAA were developing their own NIL rules, which could put Virginia University at a disadvantage when it comes to recruiting talent.
We need to make sure that we put our universities on solid footing, on a solid foundation. I think this is going to really help.
The bill, which also bars the NCAA from punishing colleges for compensating athletes, goes into effect July 1st. In Richmond, I'm Brad Cutner.
Virginia's state senate approved Governor Youngkin's amendments on a proposal to allow utility companies to recover costs from ratepayers for early development of small nuclear reactors. Both Dominion Energy and Appalachian Power will need state approval for what expenses can be covered. The cost to Dominion ratepayers is capped at $1.40 per month. Senator David Marsden of Fairfax introduced the legislation.
As I have said from the beginning, this is not a blank check. Any cost recovery must be approved by the SEC.
The companies say the fees will help develop the reactors within the next decade, as they aim to meet renewable goals set by the state. In 2017, Dominion suspended plans to expand its North Anna nuclear plant. The company spent more than $600 million on development, about half of which was charged to ratepayers. Well, the General Assembly is expected to return to the Capitol next month for a special session on the budget. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope has a preview.
Budget standoffs are nothing new in Virginia politics, and recent years have seen a number of disagreements that extend all the way to and sometimes even past the deadline of the new fiscal year beginning on July the 1st. Former Governor Jim Gilmore says the current governor has the upper hand in his continuing standoff with members of the General Assembly.
Basically, the legislature, I think, ran up the white flag and said, you know, we're not going to accommodate this governor unless we start over. And I think that's a victory for him.
But will members of the General Assembly end up victorious in the end? Bill Leidy is a former chief of staff to two former governors, and he says lawmakers usually have the upper hand in these kinds of negotiations.
They're the ones that have the power to put the budget in place. So, the governor is really following the lead of the legislature when it comes to the budget.
If members of the General Assembly are unable to come to an agreement with the governor, Virginia might end up facing a government shutdown unless they can strike a deal before the 1st of July. Michael Pope.
Well, now let's get the view from Jeff Shapiro, political columnist at the Richmond Times-Dispatch. He joins Michael to talk about where we're headed next.
We are heading into uncharted territory. Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin is about to veto the budget, prompting a special session. Jeff Shapiro, how is all of this going to play out?
The bottom line here is that the governor and the legislature both are blinking on the budget. We were heading to impasse. We were actually in impasse over the budget. Democrats who rewrote the Youngkin budget weren't going to prevail. The governor wasn't going to prevail. And there was the distinct possibility that short of this do-over, this agreement to work on a new budget, that the governor would have vetoed the budget in its entirety. That would have been unprecedented. So we have now a general agreement by a Republican governor, the Democratic and Republican legislative leaders, to rewrite the budget that has to be in place by June 30th. It would be for 2 years. It's a $188 billion behemoth. And we know pretty much what both sides want or don't want. The governor doesn't want higher taxes unless there's a tax cut. The Democrats don't want higher taxes that would affect their constituents, lower income, for example, unless the state resists additional tax relief for the wealthiest Virginians. Now we have to see if all sides can put something together by the middle of May. That's their target date. And we'll see as well if the revenue picture, bright though it may be, continues to brighten, making it easy for both sides to come to terms on a spending plan.
So Democrats who control the General Assembly rejected most of the Republican governor's amendments, including the one on skill games. These are slot machine-like machines that are in convenience stores and truck stops. The governor had an amendment that limited them to kind of rural, remote areas. The General Assembly rejected that amendment. Jeff Shapiro, how is the governor expected to respond on that?
Well, now the governor, having seen his amendments, his proposed changes rejected, has two options. He can sign it, the bill, in its original form, or he can reject it, veto it altogether. Given the amount of revenue that these skill games could produce, tax revenue, one would assume that this is going to be one tile in the larger mosaic that is that do-over budget. The governor is going to have to answer for a couple of things on this, one of which is, you know, he supported skill games as a candidate for governor, but now he is sort of putting some distance between himself and that stance, some believe largely as sort of a concession to this nascent casino industry here in Virginia.
Another item that lawmakers were debating is school construction. The General Assembly wanted to allow local governments to raise a sales tax to finance school construction. What's the latest on that?
You know, the governor had vetoed this bill. This bill was sponsored by Democrats from Northern Virginia and from Western Virginia. It was among the record 153 bills that Glenn Youngkin rejected. You know, one has to wonder, is there a little bit of spite in all of this? Because the governor did sign a Republican version of this bill when it was specific to a Southside jurisdiction a couple of years ago. This one, too, could figure in the larger debate over the budget.
All right. That's all the time that we've got for this week. My name is Michael Pope, and we've been joined by Jeff Shapiro of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Talk to you next week.
Have a good weekend.
Even though Virginia has expanded Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, many free health clinics around the state are running short of cash. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Hausman reports.
When Obamacare was approved by Congress, many people assumed it would cover those Americans who didn't have insurance. In fact, 45 million people have coverage thanks to the Affordable Care Act. But here in Virginia, several hundred thousand don't qualify or can't pay the premiums, deductibles, and copays that insurance requires.
They have to weigh that against the cost of housing, which has spiked tremendously since the pandemic. Cost of transportation, food, etc.
Rufus Phillips is CEO of the Virginia Association of Free and Charitable Clinics. He says many people were able to enroll in Medicaid under Obamacare.
During the pandemic, the federal government decided those who had Medicaid coverage should be able to maintain that coverage no matter whether there had been a change in their eligibility. following the pandemic, that public health emergency was lifted and states started redetermining eligibility for the first time in a while.
As a result, more than 160,000 Virginians were told they no longer qualified. They joined undocumented immigrants and refugees in need of care. And then there are people like Tom, who asked that we not use his last name. He works part-time, earning too little to cover insurance, but too much to be on Medicaid. And frankly, he loves going to Charlottesville's free clinic.
There's no bureaucracy, there's no paperwork, and they actually really do care about each and every individual. Having that individual attention is fantastic. And I will say, when I leave there and I'm walking to my car, there is a skip in my step.
That clinic relies on about 700 volunteers, doctors, nurses, and support staff, whose mission is not to make money, but to serve patients. Willa Barnhart is the clinic's chief development officer.
If a patient needs to come into the medical clinic four times in 3 weeks, fine. We can do that because we're not held back by any health insurance compliance.
And the clinic welcomes new patients in English and Spanish without demanding proof of need for that first visit.
Somebody can come to our desk or make a call, say, can I come in? We say yes, no questions asked. Don't show us your salary, don't show us anything. Just come in. We give an appointment, we give them a 30-day supply of medications, and then we help them find their appropriate medical home. And sometimes it is the free clinic, sometimes they qualify for Medicaid or Medicare, and we can help them navigate that because it's such a complicated process.
The clinic's new home is clean, bright, and comfortable, with large windows and colorful artwork on the walls. Exam rooms and offices are spacious, and construction crews have created additional room for dental services.
We have a walk-in clinic that opens at 7 a.m. Our patients arrive between 5 and 6 a.m. to get in line to make sure that they get that appointment.
There's a free pharmacy on the premises. Counseling and psychiatric services are provided through telehealth, and laboratory costs are covered by the University of Virginia's Medical Center and Martha Jefferson Hospital. Barnhart notes that in the long run, the free clinic's approach saves society money, ensuring people attend to problems before they get worse and require more costly care. She's grateful to have generous donors who help raise the annual budget of $2.9 million. Statewide, Rufus Phillips says many clinics are not so lucky. His group asked the state for $5 million, enough to cover 30% of clinics' operating costs. The budget contained just $1.5 million. And now that the pandemic is over, he adds, donations from foundations, nonprofits, and individuals are down.
And finally today, Virginia's Department of Forestry is fed up with an invasive tree that keeps native species from growing. So the department is hosting a tree exchange this weekend, hoping that people will cut down calorie pears and instead plant trees favored by native wildlife. And Sandy has that story.
The calorie pear is one of North America's most popular ornamental trees, with cultivars known as Bradford, Cleveland Select or Chanticleer, Capitol, Red Spire, White House, Autumn Blaze, and Aristocrat. They're lovely in the spring, sporting delicate white blossoms. But Lori Chamberlain at Virginia's Department of Forestry says the species poses a problem.
It's native to Asia, and it was introduced to North America in the early 1900s. And it did really well here, a little too well, and so now we see it taking over some of our natural areas.
Dense groves of calorie pear block sunlight, so small native trees like redbud, serviceberry, oak, and dogwood can't survive on the forest floor. And that's bad news for the birds and animals that have evolved here.
Calorie pear actually is not great for wildlife. It is not a preferred host of caterpillars, and many of our young birds need to eat caterpillars to develop.
The trees are also structurally weak, prone to snapping in stormy weather. So the state has launched a pilot program to replace them. People in and around Charlottesville were invited to cut down calorie pears and exchange them for native varieties. The idea proved so appealing that the state is no longer inviting people to participate in Saturday's tree exchange. It does hope, however, to expand to other parts of Virginia next year. I'm Sandy Houseman.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.